ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय।
Bhagavatam, Canton Text 21, Translation and Commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. His godbrother, who was like his grandfather's age, he would fan him all night. There was no electric fans, it was very hot, so he would fan him all night. He was old and sick. So he said, nowadays you don't get the opportunity, there's no guru seva like it used to be, because electric fan has spoiled guru seva. You can go out and distribute Prabhupada's books, you can do that. So that was the way it used to be. They'd fan all night and then they'd do service in the day also. They'd hardly sleep. But actually when Prabhupada was giving class, just there'd be always some GBC one side with a chamar and the other side with this peacock fan. So that's nice. Translation. Lord Krishna, personality of Godhead, approached them and offered due honor and respect to each and every one of the friends, relatives, citizens, and all others who came to receive and welcome him. Purport. The Supreme Lord, Personality of Godhead, is neither impersonal nor an inert object unable to reciprocate the feelings of his devotees. Here the word yathavidhi, or just as it behooves, is significant. He reciprocates just as it behooves with his different types of admirers and devotees. Of course, the pure devotees are of one type only, because they have no other object for service but the Lord. And therefore the Lord also reciprocates with such pure devotees, just as it behooves, namely, he is always attentive to all the matters of his pure devotees. There are others who designate him as impersonal, and so the Lord also does not take any personal interest. He satisfies everyone in terms of one's development of spiritual consciousness, and a sample of such reciprocation is exhibited here with his different welcomers. Prabhupada writes here, there are others who designate him as impersonal, and so the Lord also does not take any personal interest. Srila Prabhupada is in this purport discussing yayata mang prapadyante tangs tathaiva bhajami aham. As Krishna states, Lord Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, as they surrender to me, I accordingly worship them, as the actual term is used. Krishna reciprocates accordingly. So those who consider the Supreme to be impersonal, they're quite convinced of that. Because to them, the Supreme is impersonal. Of course, the Supreme is not subject to our imagination. The Supreme is not as we designate him or it to be. He is objective, not subjective. That is a great mistake of the pantheists, or to use a simple word, Hindus. They think you can worship God in any way you like, and that will, God is whatever you want him or it or she to be. In one sense, that's true, because he reciprocates. And even if you have a completely wrong concept, he helps you to think that that concept is correct. Yipiyanyadevata bhakta yajanti shadhyanvitaha tepi mameva kontaya yajantya vidhi purvakam. Here we have in this verse, yata vidhi. Krishna reciprocated according to the proper procedure. But those who worship different demigods, Krishna says, actually they worship me. And many people, they like to quote that from Bhagavad Gita. Tepi mam eva kunteya. That worship is meant for me. But avidhi purvaka. It's not done properly. So it may be that we see a certain demigod as the supreme, but that's not the actual, that's a wrong concept. Then how is it that people are attached to that? Yo yo yang yang tanung bhakta shradhi achate michati tasya tasya chalang shradham tatayva, what is that? Tasya tasya chalang shradham dadami vididhamyaham. That if one is attached to worshipping different demigods and thinks that this demigod is supreme, Krishna says, I make their faith strong. Not just strong, achala, immovable. You might have, I'm sure you've noticed, when you try to speak to people who are attached to some particular path, they're already a committed Christian or worshipper of Sai Baba number one or number two, or there are a few number threes waiting for the present one to drop out of his wheelchair and go to whichever hell Yamaraj is setting up for him. So how is it that people, they can't listen, even if you offer good arguments, but they can't change, they can't even, many of them won't even begin to listen to what you have to say. I remember once a long train ride that was Howrah to Delhi, talking for hours with some Bangladeshi Muslims who were going to Ajmer, to the holy place, to visit some tomb of some Muslim saint, which actually, according to Muslim purists, they shouldn't be doing that anyway. So hours and hours, logically, point by point, discussing, and eventually, you know, all their silly arguments, which going round and about and back and forth, and eventually got to the point where all their arguments were defeated, and then the logical conclusion was, as I was saying, that God is a person. And having gone through all this, they said, well, we don't believe that. And then why discuss? If at the end you're just going to say, I don't believe it, if it becomes totally subjective, then why make a show of discussing objectively in the first place? It means they were never actually discussing on the intelligent platform. It was blind faith. That blind faith, Krishna says, I make people have blind faith. They believe the wrong thing. Krishna says, I help them to believe that. Why is that? Well, he is seeing everything, allowing everything. He is upadeshta, anumanta. He sees and he allows. Doesn't mean he approves. But those who are interested to know the truth in full are very few in this world. Satyanu Sanditsu, this Sanskrit term was used, compound word was used by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. means those who are searching for the truth. So most people are not searching for the truth. Most people are searching for sense gratification. And for those who have taken to what they consider to be some spiritual path, they consider that to be supreme. There are so many people going to Shirdi. Recently, I went on a train from Secunderabad to Bidar in Karnataka. So it's the daily Secunderabad to Manmar express. So I was wondering, what's Manmar? Why should there be a daily train from Secunderabad to where? What's the name of that place? Why? And the train's full. They say, yeah, it's full every day. What's the thing in Manmar? Shirdi. Oh, so many people are going to Shirdi. It's a big thing. People have faith. Presumably, they're getting something. Someone told me a few years ago that I tried so many things. I worship this God and that God, another God. I worship Krishna. And then eventually I went to Shirdi and then I got good luck. So, getting something, it would seem. Otherwise, why would so many people go? It's possible to promote something only by advertisement. You find there are some kind of gurus, they become prominent just by advertisement. But actually they have, some rich people decide to become their followers, or some mafiosi need to have their money laundered, so they do it through some ashram. So they promote some guru, but the guru he can't speak very attractively, is not good at smiling, doesn't smile very much, and he's not very good looking, and doesn't know how to sing songs very nicely. So you can promote such a guru for some time, but it won't last. There has to be some attractive feature. So that these bogus things, they're going on, it would suggest that there's some shakti is there, but that shakti is holy material. People feel satisfied. Yeah, I got what I wanted. I went to Shirdi and then my backache got cured, and in Chennai there's the Visa Ganesh temple. If you want a visa for America, go there. Well, yeah, right till the end of the class. Don't go now. There's no train just now. Visa Ganesh. He's the one. You want your visa for America? That's it. Do some puja, few coconuts, give the priest 100 rupees or something, and get your visa. Jai Ganesh. So people get something. Krishna has invested potency in the demigods and even in some not demigods. Some people who are some kind of sadhus, or not sadhus at all, some kind of potency is there. And people feel satisfied. I got what I wanted. Someone came the other day. It's a very common thing. People come and say, well, since I started doing bhakti, I'm getting more problems. So yeah, of course, that's normal. That's Krishna's mercy on you. He wants to see if you want to worship Him or you want Him to serve you. What do you want? That's the test. So many times people come and say, I got this problem, I got that problem. You say, oh, you're very lucky. Krishna's being merciful to you. They can't understand it at all, because they think that dharmasya hi pavargasya. They think that religion is meant for increasing our existence within this material world. That's what they think it's for. That shloka is there from Bhagavatam, Prabhupada. And he was asked what is his favorite verses. He said, dharmasya hi apavargyasya. Dharma is meant for getting free from the miserable conditions of this world, which are sometimes described as pavarga, pa, parishram, fa, fena, foaming at the mouth from your so much work, parishram. Ba, Prabhupada described this as bhetata, just uselessness, pointlessness. Bha, bhiti. And at the end of one round, mrityu. So people, they think that in the middle of all this working hard, foaming at the mouth, pointlessness, fear, culminating in death, if I can get a few cherries to eat, that's great. If I can get gold knobs on my bathroom, or gold flush as I flush the toilet, then that is my success. So if there's any god, demigod, yaksha, rakshasa, anyone who will effect that, they feel very, yes, this for me is the truth. In the Western countries, there's a not very big group, but people who worship Satan. Now, there's no actual person as Satan, but they have the idea of some nasty or evil spirit who's a competitor to God. Of course, this idea, this belief in Satan, Shaitan, in Hindi, that is there in the Semitic religions. That means Islam, Judaism, and Christianity. But it's actually a form of atheism to think that there's some competitor to God, some evil person. But anyway, there are some people who worship Satan, and they say that by worshipping him, he gives you all material things. And he said, actually, there's no real difference between us and the worshippers of God. You worship him for material things and we worship Satan. We just think that Satan's better at delivering the goods. It's a better dial a pizza joint than the church. Worship Satan. You get your pizzas quicker and with more tomato juice, tomato sauce on top. So it comes to the same thing. So who is interested in the truth? Who is satya? Satyanu sandhanitsu. Who is interested in worshipping the truth? Mostly, or finding the truth. Most people consider that if my senses are satisfied, that is perfection. Just like the goats, the example is there. They're standing in the corral, waiting to be one at a time, they're being pulled in for slaughter. And in the meantime, they engage in sex and think, that's very nice. And next, they're going to be slaughtered. So, Krishna reciprocates. You get what you want. Everyone gets what you want. You might not get it as you expected, but you get what you want and you get what you deserve. You want to be God, well, you can't actually get that, but you can get a good illusion of that. So, you want to be a leader? You can be a leader if you have a strong desire to be a leader. Krishna will make you a leader. You want to be God? You can't be God, but he can make you a leader. If you do enough punya, you can become Indra. And if you don't, you can become the leader. The dogs are barking in the street. You can become the biggest dog in a pack of dogs. It's also a leader. People have the desire, so they get that opportunity. Everyone gets what they deserve. Krishna is very merciful. So he reciprocates like that. If you don't want to know him, it seems to atheists axiomatic. There's no God. What is this foolish belief? We didn't see any God. There's no God. It's just something. They're fully convinced that there's no God. And even they're superficially intelligent. They write big books and they have big scientific theories that everything has come into being by chance, which is actually extremely foolish. If you just think about it, even in a neutral way. But they're quite convinced that there's no God. And the intelligence or the conviction to think like that is supplied by God. While installing Sri Rukmini Dwarkadhish in the ISKCON Los Angeles temple, Prabhupada famously said that if you think that this is a brass made idol, then this will remain to you a brass made idol forever. You'll only see a brass made idol. You'll think that's a nice doll. Someone might think it's a nice doll. Others will say, why are you worshipping statues? But Prabhupada said, but if you accept that this is Krishna, then Krishna will talk to you. Why has Krishna come as the deity? Because he wants to talk to you. You have to prepare yourself to talk with him. Prabhupada mentioned that Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj, he was talking to his deities. Now he might have appeared like a madman. He hardly spoke to anyone, he just spoke to his deities. But he was living in reality. People would think that he is a madman. I gave this book, Vamsidas Babaji, I gave it to one successful young Sindhi businessman in Dubai. The picture of Vamsidas Babaji, it's just about as far away from anything that a successful young Sindhi businessman in Dubai might aspire to be. He said, well, who is he? I said, well, he was a great devotee. He said, well, what did he do? I said, he spoke to Krishna. He was fully absorbed in love of Krishna. Yeah, but what did he do? How many factories did he open? And, you know, how many countries did he have his businesses in? He didn't say that, but that was, I suppose, the insinuation. You know, here am I, I'm working hard and I'm going tomorrow to another country to open a new branch of the business. And, why are you giving me a book of what's this? Some madman. So to the materialist, the devotee appears to be a madman. He's not connected with reality. Why don't you do something useful? Have you ever heard anyone say that to you? Why don't you do something useful? So many, I think. Maybe 2 years ago, we're doing Harinam Sankirtan on Oxford Street, the most famous street in London. So we were chanting on the street and a bus driver stuck in the usual traffic jam. I saw him, he shook his head as if to say that these people are just stupid. It's shaking your head like that in British culture, it's an expression of, I just can't understand it, it's so stupid. That's what it expresses. If you shake your head like that, it's just as if to express that these people they're so far gone that they're beyond talking to, they're so foolish. So he thought that reality means being stuck in a traffic jam. That's reality. Then you go home and your wife yells at you, and you sit and watch football on TV, and like that. Then you get up the next morning and go to work again, get stuck in another 8-hour traffic jam. They work about 8 hours a day. And that's reality. Bhaktisiddhanta Babaji Maharaj was living in the reality of talking with Krishna. This verse describes how Krishna is talking with the citizens of Dwarka. Some supposed theists have such a restricted sense of understanding God that the idea that He will talk to you and you can embrace Him, they consider that blasphemy. To consider that God is a person, they consider blasphemy. He spoke to Muhammad, for instance, Hazrat Muhammad, peace be upon him. And you can pray to him, you should pray to him. But he's not a person. And then there's, you can expect the mercy of Allah, but he's not a person. So all these characteristics, he spoke, he has mercy, that means there's some intelligence, there's some reciprocation. He's not a person. They're very insistent, not a person. A non-person doesn't have intelligence, so that's, Allah doesn't have intelligence. So it's not at all a developed theology. It's a kind of blind faith in some kind of superpower which they have no very clear idea of, and they even think that to have a clear idea is not possible, and that to even suppose that you have a clear idea is blasphemous. So they're stuck on a level of God consciousness which is, it actually prevents further progress. They're actually the best definition of Bhagavan. There are various definitions of Bhagavan or the absolute truth in the Vedic literature. The best concise description, Raso Vayasaha, he is rasa. This transcends his being Sarva Shaktiman, Shada Ishvarya Purna. Not exactly transcends, but it's the ultimate manifestation of his godness, that more than being great, powerful, wealthy, worshipable, he's full of rasa. There's no translation for the word rasa. Yas chamatkara bhara bhu hridi sat vojvale bardham. That rasa means that which creates a sense of extraordinary wonder within the purified heart. That is transcendental rasa. Mundane rasa is something else. It's a perverted reflection. But he's so wonderful that everything about him produces a sense of wonder. One of the gola rasas or secondary rasas is Adbhut rasa. That's the underpinning of all the rasas, that everything about him is wonderful, and it produces among his devotees an ever increasing sense of attachment and love. And this rasa, it's this sense of chamatkar. It's always something relishable. There are other bibhatsaras, means a sense of disgust. But even that in relationship with Krishna is something relishable. And of course all the rasas, they culminate in madhuras. The essence of rasa is something very sweet. So Krishna is very sweet, rasamai. But this understanding is at best only very vaguely understood in those religious processes which don't really have any idea of the Supreme Lord. In the Christian faith, I think especially in the Catholic faith, sometimes they promote the Holy Family, Jesus, Mary and Joseph. Although there's practically no information about that in the New Testament at all. So they promote this and they show a nice family, Joseph, he's forgiven Mary for being pregnant before they got married, and Jesus is there, but it's all an imagination, and the whole idea that Jesus himself is God, it's another imagination. They don't have any real information. And not only do they not have information, but because they think they have some information, they think they got it right. Therefore, when presented with actual knowledge of the personality of Godhead, here he's entering Dwaraka, he's reciprocating with his friends and relatives and his citizens, then they reject that. No, it cannot be like that. Sometimes in our modern ISKCON, devotees are very enthusiastic for interfaith dialogue. But interfaith, the whole concept suggests that it's just a matter of faith, and then whatever you believe, what you believe, and I believe what I believe, and your belief is as good as mine. But blind faith is not very valuable. Faith is good, but there's faith in what is correct is good. It's good to believe. You may not understand it. It's good, but it's good to believe. For instance, that it's not good to drink toilet cleaner. It's good that the parents may tell the child, don't drink toilet cleaner. It's pink color. It looks like strawberry milkshake. But the parent says, don't drink that. So it's good for the child to believe it. But if he has faith in the wrong thing, that it is good to drink toilet cleaner, then he'll get a very bad experience. Because it's not at all good to drink toilet cleaner. So faith is good, but it should be faith in what's correct. To have faith in that which is not correct is harmful. And we may be convinced that it's correct, and we may be willing to fight and go to war and kill others and sacrifice our own lives. Tasya tasya chalang shradham tameva dvidhamya. Krishna gives that such strong faith in something which is meaningless and useless. But first, before we talk about faith, we should talk about tattva. What is the actual fact? Now, is God as you perceive? I mean, either you got it right or you got it wrong. Now, is God actually Jesus? And is Jesus, is he blessing your slaughterhouses? In Hinduism also, you have, in Andhra Pradesh, you'll find so many Balaji poultry farms, Balaji hatcheries, Srinivas wine shop. Is it really a fact that Balaji is he's blessing your chicken torture and slaughter? First you should understand what is the fact, and then be religious. If you can be very religious and faithful and observe everything in the right way, according to the rules given in your religion, but if the religion, the whole religious process is based on a mistake, or it's incomplete or imperfect, then you didn't actually get the benefit from doing so. So first we should understand, what is the fact? What is the nature? You want to worship God? What is the nature of the personality of Godhead? It may seem to you that I worship Ganesh, I worship Krishna, I worship Dasaram, then I came to Shirdi and then everything nice. My backache got cured. My son got his visa for America. So, Shirdi, that's it. So it may seem to you that this is the right thing. But first we have to ascertain what it is in our own real self-interest. We just presume that the body is the self, and that fulfillment of bodily demands is our self-interest. Therefore we find so many times, again and again and again, Prabhupada tells, you're not the body, you're spirit soul, you have no connection with this body. How many times did Prabhupada say that? It's not countable. Because we're so much addicted to considering ourselves in terms of the body. If we can actually understand I'm not this body, then someday we might wake up to thinking that, well, what happens to this body isn't, after all, that important. It's temporary. It's vinashi, but the soul is avinashi. So what's my real self-interest in terms of the soul? This is Bhagavatam. This is the ultimate conclusion of what is spoken in Bhagavad Gita, that the soul has an eternal relationship with this Supreme Soul. We can dance with Krishna, eat with Krishna, steal Krishna's lunchbox. The Dwaraka residents, they don't do that. Nor does Krishna have a lunchbox. But in Vrindavan, he has a lunchbox. And his friends may steal it. In sport, in play. This is unimaginable to those who perceive the Supreme as their order supplier. It doesn't go beyond their religion, however pious they may seem to be. Their religion doesn't go beyond in engaging Bhagavan just like some hired coolie or something like this. Give me this, give me that, give me something else. Which, although it may seem to be very pious, it verges on offense to the Supreme Lord, that you're just, give me this, give me that, give me something else. There's no love there. It might seem like love, but that love, it's based on the same concept of love that is there in this material world, that I love you because I'm expecting to get something from you for my sense gratification. Who will love an ugly woman? Who will decide that, or who will be attracted? They put in the newspapers all the pictures of the beautiful woman. Beautiful woman means that there's that book, Hare Krishna Explosion by Hayao Griva. So there's describing new devotees in San Francisco. So They're just hippies and now they became devotees. And some beautiful girl goes by and one of the devotees' men is looking. And the other says to him, come on, let's just do blood, bones and muscles and fat. He said, yeah, but it's all in the right place. So it's the same stool, muscle, blood, bones, fat, but the shape of the bag is more attractive than that of other bags. So, what is our self-interest? We should know our self-interest is to become free from this wrong attraction. And to become attracted by being attracted to whom, by serving whom, our real self-interest will be served. Bodily self-interest is not in our self-interest. So Krishna is ready to reciprocate. These descriptions are here. Descriptions of Bhagavatam are there. If we become attracted to hearing Bhagavatam, then gradually we hear Bhagavatam, we hear Bhagavatam, we hear Bhagavatam, and then we just walk right into the Bhagavatam. The chance is there that you're hearing and hearing and hearing, and then hearing means to connect with reality, and then we become absorbed in that reality, which to non-devotees appears to be like a dream or an imagination. To them, reality means the traffic jam. This is real life. So faith is required. This discussion of Bhagavatam is based on the basic philosophy of Bhagavad Gita. Even that philosophy of Bhagavad Gita, although it's, when explained by devotees, we can understand it's what in modern terms we might call it's rational. Tattvamulak, we could say, if you want to give some Sanskrit term. But at the same time, Mahaprasade Govinde Nama Brahmane Vaishnave Swapapunyavatam Rajan Vishvasunaiva Jayati. Those who are not sufficiently pious, even they have the chance to chant the holy names, to take the Mahaprasad of Govinda, to associate with the Vaishnavas. If they're not sufficiently pious, then even they have the opportunity, but they won't feel any attraction. They won't have any faith in that. So preaching is at various levels. Preaching is at one level is to increase people's faith in Krishna consciousness. In the beginning, people are on a very foolish level, especially in Kali Yuga. Building big temples is for the glorification of Krishna, but even more so to create faith in people. That this is something very important. This movement is something very important because it has big temples. The importance of this movement doesn't depend on big temples. But Prabhupada knew that he brought his Western disciples to India and he knew that unless they built some big temples, the Indian people won't take them seriously. He won't take the message seriously. So Prabhupada was very interested to build some big temples. Then when some big temples were built, then Indian people started to consider this movement something very important. The temple didn't, the big building didn't make it important, but in the eyes of foolish people, which means pretty much everyone, then it became important. And then they just began to be willing to, all right, what have they got to say? Prabhupada's importance did not increase by his building big temples, but the appreciation of his importance among foolish people began when they saw something which in their estimation they considered important. Of course the temple is important, But it's important not for the reason that the foolish people think it's important, because it costs so many crores to build. It's important because it's meant for the service of Krishna. So in the beginning, it means to create faith in the right thing, and people are a long way from even beginning to understand what the right thing is. But gradually, that general idea, Krishna consciousness is something important, something attractive, gradually that general faith, Lokik Shraddha, has to be brought to the point of Shastriya Shraddha, scriptural faith, then commitment. Lokik Shraddha is all right in the beginning, but that's Lokikta, that popularism or popularity, what is meant for attracting the public, should never be confused with what is the actual essence, which is that everything should be done for the satisfaction of Krishna. Krishnarte akila cheshta. Everything should be for the satisfaction of Krishna. So practically for preaching, you can do almost anything. But then what are we bringing people to? Just like you can have a rock concert and that might attract people to come. But if they think that, well, Krishna consciousness means free rock concerts, that's the sum and substance. If they never get beyond that, then there was not much benefit. Or if our own devotees think that, well, this hellish music, which is meant for rakshasas and demons, that's just as good as the sweet tunes which Krishna enjoys in Vraja. And if they don't have it in Vraja, well, we'll have to introduce it there. That's why I sometimes think, you know, Prabhupada, he wasn't very happy that our devotees, the Western devotees, weren't allowed in Jagannath's Puri temple. But I'm thinking maybe it's a good idea. Because, you know, if the allowing the Western culture, then within 2-3 years they'll be selling pizza in Ananda Bazaar and they'll be having rock music in the temple. Because Prabhupada through ISKCON wanted to bring the real Indian culture, the Vedic culture, the culture of pure bhakti to the Western world. But somehow or other, it seems that in some ways the Western culture is coming to India through ISKCON. So we have to see what is the essence. Again, for preaching, we can do anything. But then if we confuse the tendency, unless we very clearly understand what is the philosophy of what is Krishna consciousness, means that everything should be done for Krishna's pleasure. In the materialistic state or in the neophyte stage, we think that what I like, that must be bhakti. That I like to do it, so Krishna must like it. But rather, what Krishna likes, I should do that. That is bhakti. So the tendency for what is attractive to our senses, it's very strong. What pulls our senses, it's very strong. It's very difficult to give that up. But at least we have to understand theoretically that what is attractive to my senses is not necessarily bhakti. Bhakti means, the very definition of bhakti, that Sarvo padhi viniramuktam tatparatvena niramalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchate. Engaging the senses in the master of the senses, which is actually possible when we become free from all bodily designations and attractions. When we are on the transcendental platform, that is bhakti. But in the beginning, we offer people that here's something for you to enjoy. Come and enjoy. Come and we come to the temple and enjoy. Oh, I didn't think I could enjoy like that in the temple. Then gradually you come, and then gradually the message is given. Actually, personal enjoyment is the cause of all distress. Give that up and surrender to Krishna. Then we'll see who will stay. So we may opposite give some bait, just something, just the absolutely what is the opposite, or present Krishna consciousness in a way that people can relate to. If we see Gaur Kishordas Babaji Maharaj, he was very strict. He only had one disciple. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur had so many disciples. He was also very strict. Preaching means to make some allowance in the beginning. But then that has to be honed. That if our understanding remains at the beginning platform, everyone comes to some religious life for what I can get for my own personal enjoyment, defined in terms of aham mameti, I, me and mine, defined in terms of this body. So to advance beyond that, to go beyond that, to understand this is not at all in our own real self-interest, that is advancement of Krishna consciousness. One can play with Krishna. Who can play with Krishna? Krishna's friends. Someone else came to play with Krishna who wasn't his friend at all. Who is that? Vatsasura. Just pretending. But he was identified soon. So, he was an intruder. He didn't really belong there. All right, Hare Krishna. I'll finish there. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Hare Krishna. Any question about all this? Yeah, you're going to give the mic.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, you're explaining about all these false gurus or gods who are being worshipped. Presumably they have some potency.
So that's what I was saying. It appears they have some potency. Otherwise, they couldn't last. The attraction to them wouldn't last. People must be getting something.
So my question was, does this potency come from some siddhi which they got and they are still having it after they died? Or
where does presumably it works something like that. Krishna has invested some potency through his material energy. Something is there. Some siddhi is there.
The 8 siddhi that I mentioned, they are not inclusive. That means there can be some siddhis which can continue to exist, some siddhis related to the body, which can continue to exist even after the body is destroyed.
That's what I was saying. It appears to be like that. I haven't found any, or I don't recall any Shastric description of that, but it appears from what we see that definitely we know. I mean, we have the case of Raghavendra Swami at Mantralaya, who was always at some point someone has to adjust the mic and make some feedback. He was a regular standard acharya of the Madhva Sampradaya. He wrote books of philosophy. He wasn't some bogus person at all. He's a great devotee. But then he told that I'm now going to enter samadhi, and his samadhi. So he's there, and he said, anyone who comes, they'll get benediction. So that's going on up to now. There's so many trains from here go to that Mantralayam. Mantralayam Road is the station. All the trains that go to Chennai from Bombay either stop or pass through that station. So people go even now for material benedictions, even though he was a great Vaishnava Acharya. So in his case, that's going on. So it appears it's going on with other people also. And the devotees there of Madhva, they're standard Madhva Vaishnavas. They have a Gurukul there. When I went there, it was a long time ago. I wanted to sell them a set of Bhagavatam for their library. So they sat me down and took the position of Mayavadis and grilled me for about half an hour. So then they bought the books. When they saw that I was not accepting their Mayavad arguments and brought counter arguments, then they took the books. That's the main thing of the Madhvas. Up to date, they have a strong antipathy towards Shankarite philosophy. So that's the point. I mean, there's the devotees there are standard Madhvas. But the potency for material benefit is there. So there's a case of a standard Vaishnava Acharya who people are getting... And even so many people, it's a case again of yeyata mang prapadyante tangs tataiva bhajamiham. So many people report getting material benefits from going to Krishna's temple or from Prabhupada. So many times people told me, just like one time someone told me that they had so much cough trouble for so many years, and then they were just appreciating Prabhupada's Upadesha Amrita and they're holding it like this, and then the cough went away, which is not at all the mukhya phal of reading Prabhupada's books. But you can say some anusangik phal, some side effect. It helped to create faith in them. In Mayapur, the pujaris, Pankajangri and Jananivas Prabhu, they like to tell stories of Jagannath and Nrisimhadev, how these deities, people go and their eyes get cured and so many things, which the deities may reciprocate like that. That's not the actual result of serving the Lord. But it creates lokik shraddha, some kind of beginning faith in people. Someone was telling me the other day, what was that in ISKCON Punjabi Bagh temple? Who was telling me that? That the Jagannath there had taken the spoon in his mouth and eaten the food or something like that. And so you can see it on the internet. I didn't bother looking on the internet. All right, he did it. Jai Jagannath. But that's not his... I'm not going to base my whole Krishna consciousness on, or my whole purpose of life on some... You know, the Lord reciprocates in such a way, maybe some... For someone they need, or that helps them, or something like that, to have faith in Jagannath. But if your faith is based on that, then it's time to read Prabhupada's books. So many people are waiting, you know, did the deity speak to you? Have you seen Krishna? Their idea of God consciousness is based on a very mundanely sensual platform. The Lord may speak to you. He appeared before Daksha. And Daksha was a pious materialist. He didn't stop being a pious materialist after the Lord appeared to him and spoke with him.
Hare Krishna. Maharaj, as you mentioned in your lecture regarding Western culture coming to India through ISKCON.
Yeah.
As we see that ISKCON and Krishna, like Krishna also himself is all accommodating, like in terms of
what?
All accommodating. Like he is telling that like women, like Shudras and everyone can approach me and they can be doing bhakti.
And all accommodating.
So in terms of...
What does that mean, all accommodating? Does that mean you can be a demon and be also, that's bhakti? What does it mean, all accommodating? Could you explain what you mean by that term?
It means all can approach Krishna. And Krishna, then by approaching Krishna, they will be in eventually get purified. And then they will follow the...
Yeah, but yayatamang prapadyante, Kangsa is also thinking of Krishna. So all accommodating doesn't mean you can do any damn nonsense you like, and that's bhakti. There are also rules of Shastra. You approach Krishna, but if you want to come into bhakti, then you have to follow the rules of Shastra. This is this Western nonsense that is this... This so-called liberalism, that everything, you do whatever you like and everything's all okay. It's Western liberalism and it's Indian Mayavad also. So people like this, that you just do whatever you like and it's bhakti. Don't be, whether you go to Mangalarti or not, it's all the same because it's what you feel in your heart. That's what's really important. This is rascaldom. This is an insult to Shastra and the Acharyas. That you don't have to follow. You just do whatever you like and you just feel in your heart and that's bhakti and it's all the same. And so many things. Mixing up the neophyte platform with the liberated platform. So on the neophyte platform you have to follow rules and regulations to become advanced. But the neophyte thinks, I'm already advanced. I'm already on the platform of bhav, so I don't need to follow. There's so many bogus things. You have to be very careful. You have to study Shastra and understand what is actually favorable for devotional service. There may be different opinions about that. So then, who you're guided by, people tend to follow who they're guided by. And then, how your own sincerity. That was, just like this question, now in India, which was unimaginable one generation ago, we find that in ISKCON temples, not anywhere else, hardly, that the women are dancing ecstatically in kirtan. Ecstatically? I don't know if it's, Swarup Shakti ecstasy or what it is. One devotee from Bangladesh was telling me he joined the parikrama of the Namhata. That means the Bengali devotees. And all the women are dancing. And he said all the local villagers are shocked. So what the local villagers who are eating fish and, they wouldn't consider doing, our liberated women in ISKCON are doing, having learned it from the West. And then all the time people are coming to me and saying, do you think this is proper? Well, on the liberated platform, yes, probably. If we're all liberated souls, just like we find in the Bhagavatam that Krishna and his devotees, they're playing holy sports with each other and the bodies are getting wet and but lusty people became disturbed, even though their forms are fully spiritual. They be the of Krishna and his queens. Lusty people, their minds became motivated by lust upon seeing this. So that was the culture, that women dance ecstatically in kirtans in their own private satsangs in which men are not allowed. Because even though they may be liberated, which they may be, although probably not in every case. But others may see it differently. One temple president told me that after the women started dancing, they used to get a lot more outside people, all the rickshaw drivers coming to the kirtans, because it's a free dance show. They came to see the women dancing. That was a few years ago. So you may say, well, Prabhupada allowed it for the women in the West. That's true. But he never encouraged his women disciples in India to do that. And he made very... You see, what Prabhupada made various allowances for preaching in the West, that doesn't mean that that's the ultimate level that should be adopted everywhere. Rather, we should move towards that culture or the traditional Vedic culture which is conducive for practicing Krishna consciousness. That's my opinion, they will say. That's why I said it's important who you're guided by also, because we tend to believe who we're guided by. You could argue it this way, the other way, and it's natural ecstasy of the soul. I have my doubts if it's the natural ecstasy of the soul. It's not fair, the women don't get the same chance. Yeah, maybe that's true. Not fair means that there are different rules for men and women. Different bodies have different rules. Those rules are there in traditional culture to safeguard against illicit sex and against promoting lusty attraction. And it might seem that the women have a bad deal in the modern age, women's liberation. They should have the same chance as men to do everything. But in traditional cultures, it's not there. You don't get the same chance. There's a reason for that. It's for the ultimate best interest of everyone. But those who don't know the science of the soul, they take everything in a very superficial way. And they presume that Manu is anti-woman and anti-Shudra and so many things. They confuse the whole thing. So in this way, Sahajism and Mayavad have entered ISKCON. You can complain to the GBC if you like for me having said that, but it's inevitable. It's inevitable. Even after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left, even in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's presence, there was Mayavada and Sahajism, because that's the nature of the material world. So, immediately after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu left, in his name so many wrong things were being practiced, and the right things were also going on, but eventually it took the acharyas, Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, to point out clearly what is the difference. Because most people couldn't see the difference between what is real Gauriya Vaishnavism and what isn't. So, it's not all the same. And it shouldn't be shocking to consider that Mayavada and Sahajirism have, to some extent, entered ISKCON, because it's inevitable. Unless you're punching it out all the time, it's definitely going to enter in. Unless we very clearly distinguish between what is actual Krishna consciousness and what isn't, then what isn't is going to masquerade as what is. And unless we're very clear to understand, according to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra, what is actual Krishna consciousness and what isn't, then we're going to say, well, it's all the same. And whatever you feel, whatever you want to do, it's all the same, which in itself is Mayavada. So there is a difference between following Shastra and Acharyas and not following, and in the name of preaching or in the name of liberalism or in the name of being all accommodating. All accommodating doesn't mean you can do any damn thing you like. It means that everyone can come, but when you come, you have to follow what's given by Shastra. You can accommodate everyone, but you have to follow some basic principles also. It's not you do whatever you like and that's bhakti. That's comfortable. That makes us feel comfortable. Then we don't get blamed for blaming others. We get a reputation of being very open-minded and very generous, very accommodating. We get a reputation as a sadhu. And if you speak against nonsense, then you're called narrow-minded, biased, bigoted. But then is there a difference between following what the Shastra and Acharyas have given us? Is there a difference between following and not following? Is it all the same? Be careful of these terms, all accommodating. You should understand, all accommodating? What is that? Who said Krishna's all accommodating? He doesn't. Who said that? Why all accommodating? Krishna says, Ya Shastra Vidhi Mutsrija Vartate Kama Karata Nasa Siddhim. You don't get Siddhi if you don't follow Shastra. It's not that all accommodating. No, there's conditions. Why all accommodating? Namang Dushkritino Murha. What is this all accommodating? Murha, Dushkriti, they can also come to Krishna. On Krishna's terms, not on their terms. You have to stop being Dushkriti and become Sukriti. Sukriti Van. Be careful. Things people say may sound very attractive. That's why I was asking, what do you mean by all accommodate? Define it. This kind of talk makes the language is designed in such a way that it makes our thinking fuzzy. You stop thinking clearly. When you start using terms like all accommodating and udar, without defining them clearly, then your thinking becomes fuzzy. Mayavad is designed like that. That you don't think clearly about anything. Everything just dissolves into a fog. That's what I'm saying. Mayavad has entered ISKCON. If you use terms like all accommodating without defining it, then people think all accommodating. Everything's okay. That's the natural conclusion. So one has to be tattva-vit, tattva-darshi. Not this jato-mat, tato-pat. Sounds good, doesn't it?